Hi, everybody. It's wonderful to see you. And obviously, you can see me. I'm a human glow stick. All right, so yeah, very quickly, my name is Jason Scott. I'm about 40 years old. I really love computer history. I love things involving anything kind of electronic, humanist. I just have enjoyed this all of my life. And I'm going to go into a little bit of that. And the name of the talk is The Save Button Ruined Everything, which is just a weird name for a talk, but we'll work with it. And I am here to try to give you some ideas of a different way of thinking of what you do, a way that is actually kind of 90 degrees lateral from what a lot of other people talk about, because they tend to be aimed towards a goal, and I'm aimed towards a wish. So we'll deal with it, right? So, the universe. I am a huge fan of the universe. Great places to eat, very little litter, hugely interesting if you go to the right places, right? So, I mean, people have written amazing poems about the existence of reality, but these days we just do that. So, universe, love it, love it, love the universe. So, so the universe, unfortunately, has problems, like death. Now, we don't like to talk about death. As it turns out, the last 5 or 10 years, I've had to really talk a lot about death. So we usually kind of couch it, and we call it entropy. Entropy kind of works out that way. It's like, well, the universe kind of wants to break you apart and make a new thing out of you. But until then, have a lot of fun. And I just wanted to take one moment because this kept hitting me. I am fascinated that there is a human being who real-time translates what I'm saying into another language. This is an amazing talent. Both of them. I've been watching them. Accessibility is awesome. But mostly, you know, entropy and death mean the end. So when you talk about technology and you talk about things, building things, it's always we're going to build something, we're going to add to it, we're going to go to a new place. Everything's going this way. And it's never a case of what happens at the end, because there's always an end, right? You start out and everyone's happy and they give you cake, and at the end, a nurse checks on you and something's wrong, right? Not so awesome, right? So the thing is, being a historian, all right, so this is the cat that's being talked about, Sockington. So, this is a great statement to make in life, when my cat was being interviewed for People magazine, I had this person say, okay, and what is your job? And I said, well, I'm a computer historian. And she said, okay, great, you know, da da da. And they interviewed me, and they obviously took a photo of the cat, and everything was great. And she calls me back, and she says, my editor won't accept computer historian. At the end of it, I agreed to a historian, you know, and so this is 2010. People magazine, which in America has its pulse, hand on the pulse of the proletariat, decided that no, they weren't ready. They weren't ready in 2010 for the idea of computer history. Anyway, so the end. So as a computer historian, I started to, you know, when you're working in things that are history, right, you do two things happen when you're a historian. Number one, you start to really hate people. Because you see them at their worst, because it's whatever they left that caused the most damage that causes the most records. So everyone sucks, and it's terrible. But the other thing is that you spend a lot of time watching these curtains drop. And where is it gone? And then you get to go back and say, well, what were they trying to do here? And people take an interest in it, sometimes only a cursory interest. But they'll take an interest in, like, oh, really, they used to have that back then. You know, this is what I call the game of firsts. What's the first instant messaging? What's the first time that somebody used the word awesome, right? I mean, when you hear something like the word weirdo, which in the, I believe, 16th century meant prostitute, right, you're like, that's kind of interesting. A part of your brain goes, wow, that's neat. I mean, that's the extent of your investment, but that's fine. That's a good thing. People love that. People love being taught a new thing they didn't even know they needed 5 seconds before, and 5 seconds after realized they actually didn't need it. But for that moment, ooh, it was awesome, right? Like, here is an early anti-corn harvesting piracy ad that informs you, only use the registered corn harvesters from the Corn Harvester Association. You will be liable for damages. Right? This is 1884, that you have an anti-piracy ad. Don't go for those. And with little pictures saying, use this brand, use our special mark of quality, right? And so a part of you might go, you're right, they did that a long time ago. So, you know, these kind of weird little mirror images happen all the time. So in computer history, what interests me is the fact that for people in the personal computer age, this really affected them. This is a kid's notebook from 1983, where he, in class, happily drew the logos of all the computer companies and software companies that he loved. And he obviously cared about it enough that he kept it all these years. You know, so computers were not just a matter of, oh, this happened, this happened, this happened. They are emotional parts of our lives, right? And we've put our lives into them. And we are doing that at a greater and greater and greater rate. And you know, again, I understand that if you look at this, and if I say to you, this is the original 18-sector modification boot code for the Broderbund line of software, taken at Roland Gustafson's actual computer, while overlaid on a metafilter discussion about that very same thing, you can be forgiven. You can be forgiven for not going, oh, you're obviously very excited about it. And awesome, good work there. But for a certain group of people, that's like, and that happened because a bunch of us went to the original house and helped extract that from the data. And so, you know, efforts were made to extract this history before it went away. I'll be talking a lot about floppy disks in about a second. I run a site called textfiles.com. This is mostly what I'm known for, actually, because most people don't know I'm the cat guy. Good. The cat guy, the cat thing, by the way, you see, this is the thing about celebrity, right? You work for years, you work on a site which is collecting a whole bunch of computer history, you give speeches, you talk about everything. Twitter pops up, you go, this is kind of stupid. You put up a cat account. The co-founder of Twitter thinks it's so funny, he makes it a default sign-on. Suddenly you have 1.4 million followers for your cat. And I might add, some of the most pathetic marketing come-ons in the email you have ever seen, because a marketer doesn't know whether to talk to you or the cat. All of their little robot marketing training is like, find the person in charge and butter them up and then get them to buy our thing. And so it's always like, hey, Sockington. It just feels like they're talking to a kid who is holding dynamite. So if you give me a little bit of Twitter space, maybe the extra litter for yourself or a little tool. Anyway. But anyway, textfiles.com, please know me for that. Textfiles.com was me saying, boy, 1998, I used to use computer bulletin boards. Computer bulletin boards look like that. And it was basically a computer with a phone line with a fat guy in front of it talking to another fat guy with a computer. And so I said, wow, in 1998, where's the info on BBSs? And there really wasn't any. I found out since it's because there was a bit of a shame as BBSs became internet service providers. They didn't want to admit they were these things once. But I put up everything I had on it. That interested other people, and they started to send me more. And then finally, I become the computer history guy. Now I have a shipping container full of computers and old magazines and microfiche, and people go, you're the guy, you're the guy, you're the guy. In all these cases, I'm being given artifacts that are 20, 30 years old because nobody got around to removing them. Right? Human beings are awesome at destroying things. We are really good at it. We can do it in bulk. We can do it fast. We can do it efficiently. We can even leave a little note that we did it. Right? We're really good at it. And so the fact that I had any of this stuff was because somebody took the time to not do anything. Like, for instance, I visited the Communications Museum in Seattle, and this is just so you know. I mean, here's a man holding up an actual trouble ticket. Right? Like an actual Bell telephone trouble ticket that he generated for me by going to an actual computer, an actual switching system, doing something wrong with it, generating the trouble ticket, and he walked me through how he would do it. And he had this great engineer's line, which was, yeah, we usually solve it in 2 minutes or 2 years. But for a growing generation of people, the word trouble ticket has become an abstract concept that has no meaning with no idea of its root. It's just, you get a trouble ticket, close the trouble ticket. And there's a trouble ticket, so hooray. So let's just quickly talk about the save button. You know, we're now in this position that when you want to get rid of a file and you put it aside, you save it. If you're lucky, it auto-saves it. If you're really lucky, it does a constant incremental save onto it, you know, a la Google Docs, where it's just always saving. And it's just in this quantum state of I'm somewhere else too. And Jeremy wanted me, or I offered with Jeremy. I love Jeremy, right? You know, it's 5 seconds with this guy, and your IQ goes up 6 points. And I really love spending time with him, and we kind of bonded over hatred of what the BBC was doing when they were trying to shut down all these sites. And I promised him I'd try to do something new. You know, none of these slides, you know, with one or two exceptions just for their illustrative purposes, are from any other talk. You know, I wanted something brand new. So let's, you know, as a computer historian, you go, saving. Why do we call it saving? Because, as I'll explain, it's a terrible name. Save is not what you do, right? You don't save it. And I first had to go, you know, figure out that right now we're in this situation, right? So, there's actually, I've talked to some people who have worked really on this interesting side project of how many times do we see an icon representing the thing that you have no idea why it's called that anymore? You know, like you're going to write something and it shows an ink pen, right? It's like, oh, let's save off the file to an ink pen. And so we're in that situation, right? You know, and the save button has all these different names and it means, you know, it's an arrow into a disk means you're saving it. So I just kind of browsed out back, okay? So let's go to 1958. Nobody here is using a computer. Of course, none of you have been born yet. You're a beautiful young audience. Everyone's happy. And right there, you can see in the mention, they're talking about moon man imminent. You know, we're going to go to the moon. That's the plan. We're hoping to go to the moon, and they're discussing how a satellite will work. And it mentions a tape recorder in the satellite will save up information gathered while from the satellite. Well, satellites farthest away from Earth and send it to us on command, right? So in there you have the concept of we're saving the information for later. This, I believe, is when we first see the save command. 1964, the time-sharing system designed at MIT, which was kind of this awesome project. And here you see this thing called the save command, which will save the status of any of the user's active files. So it's a saving of an idea, right? It's a saving of a status. And then that's, by the way, what they're working on, the IBM 7094. Lots of fun with this sucker. This is the one that had that famous program that basically you type something and it would basically go out to a printer, and it was called Expensive Typewriter because that's what it was. But you also see these kind of things show up. Like there's the unsave command, which deletes a saved file, right? I shall unsave thee. And of course, your eyes go down to really, really interrogating the file directory is a much more awesome idea than just doing a directory, isn't it? What are you doing? I'm interrogating the file directory. It's got 16 sectors free, not another sector more. 1965. This is when they're talking about the 1130 computing system. This is the language I'm going to start to point you to. The interchangeable cartridge allows virtually unlimited offline storage capacity. Each one of these cartridges, by the way, saves 1 megabyte, just so you have the record. But the point is, and this always drives me nuts, because I'm just way too young for... I just don't think in terms of words. So, you know, it's got an additional 512 words, and it didn't work with me. But this concept, right? This isn't information. This is marketing. This is, look in this documentation, it's got virtually unlimited, right? When you have a saving system, saving a document is the process of saving all the changes. I like this, when to save a file, before you exit from the system or every half hour of editing time. They feel in 1980 they have to tell you how often to save, right? And, okay, so if you're younger, you say, well, that doesn't make any sense. And the reason why is because before this point, saving is a painful process where you're writing to core memory, to disk memory, to something that takes a while. So you go, save, and then you get a cup of coffee, right? So as a result, you've got to think about it. So half an hour, I've been typing. Yeah, go ahead, do it. And off you go. This is from 1987. This is a Macintosh, how do we save So it's a walkthrough, it's a tour of the Macintosh. It's beautifully done, but I just wanted to show again where this language goes. Saving your work, you write this, it goes into the computer's memory, but if you do the save, it'll save what's in memory right now. The new version will replace the old version. You will make a permanent copy of it. You will save it onto a floppy disk, okay? The computer industry's story is overpromise and underdeliver. It is. I'm sorry. You see this beautiful, beautiful full-color horseshit poster that promises you that this piece of plastic is going to get you laid. This happens all the time. All the time. Enough that we've now become inured to it. We look at it and we see this thing where the phone lifts out of your hands and makes your pets immortal. And you're like, yeah, of course, yeah. Or you have reached a level of cynicism so deep and so angry, you're just like, oh, that means it has Bluetooth. Right? It's become this kind of other weird language. You know, $325 buys you a 64-character terminal kit, 1974. One Sol 20 equals three computers. Yeah, 1K. So what interested me about this one was the 7 points before you buy your small computer, which has basically got no way to save and basically goes to the screen, is how complete is it? Is the powerful system software available? Can the system easy to expand? Is the computer well-engineered? Does it have proven reliability? Does it have good factory support? Are there maintenance people? None of these questions are about the long-term storage of the data you're generating. It's not even on the paper. It's not even something you care about. What am I going to do in 10 years with this data? What am I going to do in 20 years with this data? Will I be able to retrieve it? What format is it in? The question wasn't asked. It didn't matter on this level when you're selling these computers. And it's continued to this day. Don't worry about it. We'll handle it. You know, there's been a lot of storage. Things have gone crazy, up, down, everything else. You know, we've gotten to the point now that a gigabyte sticks, you know, you put them in your pocket, and on the inside it tells you to go to Panda Express and have a nice China dinner. And great, you know, I mean, we're to that point. And it is wonderful. I will never say it's not. But it has a kind of cavalier attitude about what storage is. I just wanted to show you this ad from 1983, I believe. It's for the Maxell floppy disk. It's got all these things about what makes the floppy disk great. And it is still, so if some of you were like, man, I could really use some really amazing out-of-town marketing. Boy, if you want to say that it has unique crystal uniformity, which endows each magnetic unit or oxide particle with a geometric regularity that ensures dense oxide packing, it translates into maximum signal retention to safeguard the information on the disk. It's a floppy disk. It stores 1.2 megs. This is what they're telling you, right? Same thing with this thing. Some of us have an emotional thing about Elephant never forgets this particular brand of floppy disk. But regardless, down at the bottom, like up here, it's telling you how awesome it is and everything else, but it says that it's guaranteed to meet or exceed every industry standard, certified 100% error-free and problem-free, and to maintain its quality for at least 12 million passes for over a lifetime of heavy-duty use. That is a big check for your mouth to write. And their ass did not cash it. They were out of business within a very short time. All right? So this has passed itself on to the web. And this is kind of where I ended up where I'm now. Right now I've got kind of a attention because I talk about Archive Team. All right? Who knows Archive Team? Who's heard of Archive Team? All right. So here's the deal. Fortune City went down, and I was like, wow, that was a lot of user-generated content. And it went down with like 1 month of warning after being up for like 10 years. And I was like, you know, crimes of a human nature start because somebody said, that's a crime. And everyone said, that's not a crime. And then a bunch of people said, actually, it's kind of a crime. So it's kind of a crime that we are now to the point that we take millions of people's files and treat them as a liability that can be jettisoned, along with the office furniture at the closure of a business, or even worse, the shifting of concepts within the company, or to pivot. Not since Casualty have I heard a better camouflage of the pain involved. We've decided to pivot to a parking lot. And the problem, of course, was that these sites were going down, there was no warning, and we had spent 25 years never telling people about data retention, about preservation techniques, about maintaining your stuff, about rebuilding it, all of this stuff that archivists kind of know, and instead we just cast them aside like so much garbage. So I assembled a group of people, there's about 100 of us that are regular, a couple, 200, whatever, that are doing other bits, and we basically go through archives and grab websites before they go down, okay? This is a picture of me. I don't always wear stupid outfits, but these guys decided. This is something illustrating us grabbing GeoCities, the late lamented GeoCities. It took us 9 months, and it ended up being 950 gigabytes, so we grabbed that. Archiveteam.org, if you want to read up on this stuff, but basically we have a whole bunch of projects. We are logging URL shorteners, because they're the stupidest idea in the world. Let's let a random rack decide in a one-time cipher pad every URL that goes through a website. That's crazy. That's DNS held underwater for 4 minutes, right? So, you know, we were doing this kind of ad hoc and doing it, and we came out with this thing called the Archive Team Warrior, just to show you that even though there's no money here, we lose money all the time, and we're doing all this work, again, 90-degree difference from what other people are doing, we designed this thing called the Archive Team Warrior. It's a virtual box, and what happens is you can boot it up on a Linux box, a Mac OS, you can boot it up on a Windows box. It starts up a Debian instance. This Debian instance then tells you what projects, who are we downloading? We did a test on Tumblr. And then it just starts downloading as fast as possible and uploading them. And it's being assigned these things. So we can go through sites extremely quickly. Here's us, for instance, downloading a site, you know, where here it's been announced it's going to close and we're kind of going along. And then you'll notice like February, people are like, oh, well, I guess we ought to. And then we get people who are basically hijacking 100 virtual boxes at work for testing. And this guy won. How do I know he won? Because we have a leaderboard. Boy, kids will do anything for leaderboards, won't they? We're adding achievements next. It's going to be awesome. By the way, here, if you want the historian giving the futurist prediction, within 5 years, we are going to legislate gamification. Because we just discovered it's crack. Right? And everyone's like, and again, this is the computer industry in a nutshell. Keep quiet and don't fuck it up for everybody else. Is the watchword whenever something like this happens, right? So while Zynga is literally scooping out children's brains and using them as money, right? We're like, oh my God, look at the ratio. The kid just never stops playing. Well, until then, like ecstasy, right? Party on. So we're doing this. We're doing gamification. So when Apple shut down MobileMe, they gave 1 year worth of warning. We downloaded it in 9 months. 274 terabytes in 9 months. Okay. An average of 735 megabytes a second for 9 months. That's not right. But this ad hoc group of people, we did this. And believe me, now that it's shut down, even though Apple gave a year, people were like, where's my stuff? You know, we get more letters from mothers who just were given a phone that would take photos of their kids and send it somewhere, and now somewhere's gone over the rainbow. And they're like, I've lost all the photos of my children. And we're like, oh, they're over here. That, you know, there's our payment. I'm probably pushing towards the end here, aren't I? What is it? No. No. So, Bill counts to 9. All right. So, this picture was a picture that I took of Bill Hurd, one of the designers of the Commodore 128. And he's holding a beautiful prototype of the Commodore 128 for me. And I thought that the important part of this picture was this, the Commodore 128. It's not. It's actually this, because Bill jumped off of a ladder and caught his finger and lost it. So, actually, this is like pretty much the last photo of Bill's finger. Just a little note for the single men in the audience. That's what caught on the ladder. I guess this is Brighton. You can get a tattoo. Just saying. Industrial accident. And Bill's funny enough about it right here that he's playing around with you. Magic trick. You know, it's funny because he immediately put up pictures of his shredded finger, and we were like, gee, after going, Jesus, Bill, what? Bill worked as a trauma specialist for like a year and a half, so for him it was like a fire drill. Hey, my finger got ripped off. Awesome, real time, real world example, fire drill. In other words, this history that we're saving, when we save things like GeoCities and we're saving these old sites, and believe me, we're keeping our eye on MySpace, that sucker's got some problems. We're keeping our eye on LiveJournal, we're constantly playing games. You know, when Gaddafi got deposed from office, one of our guys said, I'll bet Gaddafi's original site isn't going to stay up for very long. And he proactively went, grabbed the full copy of the full site, and within about a week, rebels threatened the lives of the ISP and ripped it all down and deleted it forever. Some people were like, yay, good riddance, but don't you kind of want to have a little record of what the dude was saying before he went out? And why did it happen? Because somebody said, oh, I wonder if we should do this, because he was imbued with this idea. If I am nothing else, I am an idea. And the idea is, don't delete things just because you think you're done with them. Don't just delete things because it's no longer business. Don't make it that people can't get access to their material. And that idea is not popular because it's a responsibility issue. You know, it's what privacy was a long time ago. You did privacy because it was really tough to figure out people's stuff, and they'd probably punch your lights out if they found you in their study. As soon as privacy became something that was technologically inconvenient, you know, this is part of the problem with Google and the Street View problem, was they're like, you're just telling us from the road where everything is, and you're letting us on. And people are like, no, and so various countries are fighting them. And it's so convenient, it gives you such good location data. But it's unfortunately kind of at odds with human ethics. Who's going to win? So similarly, this is a photo of Douglas Adams and Steve Moretzky. Now, this thing was around when he did the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy game for Infocom. And this was kind of a promotional photo. There's the funny stories, right, which are that basically, like, this, they didn't use this. Like, it was programmed on this. This was because the photographer didn't think this was sufficiently computer-like to impress people that they were working together. So this is a turned-off, no cables, mouse goes down here photo of the computer, right, that they basically used for testing. But I went to Steve's house and I scanned 9,000 documents out of his collection because I thought somebody should do it, so I did it. And what I found was this. So I scanned it at 16,000 DPI, something crazy, right? A really high number, because then I could go up and see photos of Steve's wife. I could see strips that influenced him. You can start to make out other influences in Steve's life that might be of interest historically, that wouldn't be there if we didn't have these highly scanned original items, or if he had thrown it out, or if all we had were these terribly grotty magazine scans. Similarly, here's a promo photo that's just supposed to show you these two Hollywood actors are on the set and doing work, so go see their movie, right? But what it really is a how-to of how they made movies in the 1930s, right? Here's the, you know, they have to do all this crazy stuff to get the shot here, to get the sound. There's the microphone. You know, here are the lights right here blaring them. You know, this is a massive instructional document that could have just been thrown out because it was just promotional material, right? Finding that sideways value is why I say keep this data. On the other hand, in the world, we have things like this. This was the Mr. Brainwash exhibit that's over in London. This is an illustration of the Beatles using broken vinyl records. And they are original Mecca records, original Capitol, and they are art now. So I expect that to happen. That's a natural flow that people take what was old and turn it into some sort of, you know, peat moss, something that will, you know, make the next generation grow. You know, the end is something, again, like I said, the computer industry does not want to talk about. But you're somebody who's involved in the computer industry, and you're like, well, Jason, okay, where's the action items? Because we all want action items, right? Especially from some random guy in a white suit. I saw a man in a white suit and a bowler hat last night. He gave me instructions. That'll fly in the office. Try that. Well, I always say, take pictures of the place you work at, take pictures of the people you're with, take copies of things you printed out. We have scanners these days, scan them in. If you're somebody who, you know, has never spent time with somebody recently, spend time with them. I know this sounds basic, but you'd be surprised if people are like, I don't have the time. I've had way too many people die on me because we didn't talk to them this year, and then they're gone, and they're gone forever. And is this morbid? A little. But it's also an understanding of the reality of the world and life cycles. Well, if you're working on the dev side, realize that when you're creating something that takes in user content, yes, the law has not recognized it yet. Yes, that's true, government hasn't recognized it yet. But you are now building a trust with your community. You are asking them to put their lives online. We did it, right? If you're a geek, we won, right? The jocks are checking sports scores on the computers, and it, you know, the cheerleaders are getting their news on when they're going to cheerlead in another whatever, right? It's happening, right? You won, all right? High school, you now own. Congratulations. Victory is yours. But in doing so, you dragged in a lot of human lives, right? I mean, I personally know the loss of pain. I have 7 cousins I don't know the name of. They are great cousins. We lost them in the Holocaust. My family did not really talk about it after that because we were kind of icked by it. And then my generation didn't get the info, and my generation died. So we don't know their names. We don't actually, they're little black boxes on our family tree because nobody took the time to talk and transfer and everything else. So when we see people putting their baby pictures online, when you're asking people to tell their stories, and if you use phrases like permanence, a place to permanently store, back that shit up, right? There's various ways you can do that. One way is to always provide an export function, right? If you have an import function and you don't have an export function and you claim it's too tough or you claim that it's too difficult, you're lying to people. Why are you doing that? That's mean. You're asking them to trust you. You know, Facebook has a terrible export function, but as we've already discovered, Facebook is coded by sociopathic 20-year-olds. I mean, you know that, right? If you ever visited Facebook, it's like basically, you know, the Warriors combined with a really bad business movie from the 1980s. My hint was, you know, the vodka bar near the coding area. But the thing is that, but it's working for them. But as a result, they have no value applied to time. I'm hoping that as Zuckerberg gets older, he'll realize the permanence and importance of what he's doing. You know, right now Facebook is, you know, we used to say Library of Congress worth of information, right? And then Flickr came along, and Flickr sucked up more photos of people. Facebook is now the number one place that humans on Earth store our history. Period. Okay? Let's not even fool around. That's what's going on right now. They have no controls. They are completely private. They had an IPO. But we have no way of knowing what they're up to. You know, if they decide they're going to delete everything tomorrow, they can. They have no rules on that. We've entered this situation because we bought in. We wanted people in. I've hammered you enough on this, but it's a very meaningful thing to me because I don't want to be running archive team forever. Running a bunch of insane people who are coding crazy achievement-based downloading games was not how I wanted to work out my golden years. So I just want to be a guy doing things and making his own stuff and taking care of his little cat. So anyway, I mean, I think you guys should be really proud of what you're doing here. Like, this is a wonderful, wonderful conference, right? Because it's focused not necessarily on making money, although that'd be nice. What I love is that it is focused on what are we doing, how can we do it better, and what do other people have to say about it? And it's not just this bullet point towards the Ferrari. It's what can we do? So I'm so glad Jeremy brought me here because I just want to iterate again. History is our future, right? History is where we came from. It tells us where we're going, and it's where we learn how we are going to be. And it makes us so much better if we don't throw things out. Now, hoarding, okay, well, I'm sorry. But If you're proud of what you've done, you'll be proud of it forever, right? Thank you very much.